excited to bring you evidence-based nutrition information focusing on addressing the root cause for imbalance. Food has the power to help you achieve lifelong optimal health without the side effects of prescription medication. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. I am Stacy Seslowski, functional nutrition registered dietitian.
And I am Leah Grace Farrick, functional nutritionist.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Power of Food podcast. We have a very special guest today, Deborah Maragopoulos. Deborah is an intuitive, integrated family nurse practitioner who has spent over 30 years blending the science of medicine with the art of healing to help thousands of people heal from a variety of symptoms and thrive by treating their hypothalamus. Specializing in neuroimmune endocrinology, Deborah focuses on optimizing the function of the hypothalamus, the maestro of symphony of hormones. She is the author of several books, including her latest, The Hypothalamus Handbook, which outlines the steps people can take to start healing their hypothalamus on their own. Known as the Hormone Queen, she's made it her mission to help everyone balance their hormones and live optimally, no matter their age. Welcome to the Power of Food podcast, Deborah.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, we're very excited to have you on. This is a really, really interesting topic that we have not had someone on to talk about yet. So we're really looking forward to chatting with you about this because I feel like it's also something that a lot of people don't know about. So I'm really excited for our audience to learn from you and learn about what this hypothalamus is and how we can affect it and all of that. But to start, can you just tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this world?
So I became a nurse when I was like 23. And at that point, I also delivered my first baby. And my first baby was born intersex, although we didn't have that terminology at the time. But in order to kind of save this child from, you know, the medical melee of issues, I had to learn hormones and receptor sites right from the get-go. So I went back to grad school and I started learning more about how the body works at a deeper level, the pathophysiology, but really found there wasn't much out there in terms of the deeper aspects of endocrinology. So I went into family practice. I did women's health for a while. Then I started my own integrative practice, trying to dive even deeper into neuroimmune endocrinology, all that biochemistry, that interfaces. And as I was doing that work, and also because I think the universe supports what your goals are and your life's purpose, you know, I said to the universe, I want to learn everything about neuroimmune endocrinology. And so the universe sent me the sickest people on, you know, the planet practically, and they'd be coming in busloads. So these are train wrecks in medicine. They've got all kinds of conditions, neurological conditions. They have endocrine conditions. They have immune issues. They're not sleeping. They're not eating. They're on lots of conventional medicines. They all wanted to come to me for a more natural, you know, switch me over, you know, lifestyle supplements, you know, bioidentical hormones instead. And so I was giving them all kinds of stuff, but feeling like I just traded the natural for the conventional. I really didn't get to the root of the issue. And so that then led me to like start really wondering, like, you know, what am I missing? Why am I not practicing upstream medicine? Not that that was a word back then. We're all practicing downstream if we don't figure out the root. And I happened to get, this was like 1998, a magazine in my office, you know, those, the ones you get to see when you're a patient, although I got scientific ones. So this was Scientific America, and it had some fat white mice on it. And these fat white mice had very similar symptoms to a group of patients I was seeing who were depressed. They weren't sleeping. They were overweight. They were hypothyroid. They had adrenal issues, insulin resistance. And they were on a multitude of medications. And with these mice, they sacrificed them. They killed them and looked inside their brains. And they found that in their hypothalamus, they weren't producing enough pro-opiomelanocortin. And that was my bingo moment. Oh my gosh, this is what I'm missing. So I started really focusing on, okay, what does the hypothalamus do? We learned it in nursing school. We learned it in medical school, but we don't really apply the knowledge. And so how could I apply that knowledge? What do I need to feed my patients in order to fix this problem? Could I optimize their hypothalamic function? And that just led to a whole, I call it my five pillars of optimal hypothalamic function, just ways to improve the hypothalamus. And we'll talk more about what the heck that is.
It
Well, thank you for describing that story, that background story to us. And I can't tell you how often I am talking with my clients about the fact that their brain is at the root of the symptoms they're experiencing. Mm-hmm. And yet they haven't yet gone there yet. You know, their first thing to do is, well, I started removing one food after the next because I just know I can't digest food well. And, you know, I'm always stressed and I can't figure out, I go exercise more because I just, you know, can't get rid of this stress. And it's all these things they're trying to do, but none of these things are truly giving them the you know, cure, the helping them resolve their issues. So I'm like, okay, let's talk about how the brain is connected to the gut and how it's connected to, you know, inflammation and all these things. So I'd love to hear what your five pillars are. I mean, that's an easy next question to find out how you're describing this process to people.
Well, let's talk about first where the hypothalamus is and why it's amenable to these five pillars, because I think that's super important from the anatomy and physiology. So your hypothalamus, if you had to put your finger right between your eyebrows, it would be in the center of your brain. It sits right above the pituitary gland. Most people remember that little pea that's hanging there. And that's the one that we can access via blood. We can see pituitary hormones and then we can see endocrine hormones. But the hypothalamus is above that, but it's below the blood-brain barrier. And that is really key to how nutrition works for the hypothalamus. It's exposed to everything you eat. It also misses everything you're not getting. It's exposed to your toxins, it's exposed to viruses, it's exposed to the environment. It all, about four out of the five of your senses run through the hypothalamus. It controls everything in your body. There isn't anything it doesn't have its finger on the button. So when I call it the maestro, the symphony of hormones, I'm talking about all your biochemistry. So when we say gut brain, it's not the brain, it's gut hypothalamus. It's specifically the hypothalamus that talks via the autonomic nervous system to the gut and receives the gut hormones and responds appropriately. It talks to your fat cells. The new anti-obesity drugs are all about hypothalamic triggers, those receptor sites in the hypothalamus. So it is super key to everything that we do and everything that our body does, and it, we ignore it.
So interesting too about the blood-brain barrier too. So it's like everything you're eating, all of the toxins you're exposing yourself to, like you mentioned, everything you're not eating that it's not getting access to. So how does the hypothalamus play into nutrition? How does nutrition impact it? Tell our audience a little bit more about the relationship between what you're eating, what you're not eating, and the hypothalamus.
So the hypothalamus basically is functional, meaning it's working properly. I don't want to give you one more analogy so that I like my patients to have little pictures in their head. So if you imagine that the hypothalamus is the operating systems of your computer and your hard drives, your body, and all your software programs are your neurotransmitters, your immune factors, and your hormones, the hypothalamus is the operating systems. That's how important it is. You can't operate this human computer without that. Okay. That includes the brain and the body. So with that being said, we have research that shows that hypothalamic dysfunction is microinflammation of the hypothalamus. And that microinflammation, and this is scientific research, we see it in animals, we see it in humans, that overnutrition, specifically with fats and trans fats and high sugar diets, causes severe microinflammation in the hypothalamus. And that sets up the cascade of metabolic disorders. Insulin resistance, hypertension, hypercholesteremia, heart disease, stroke. It also influences your immune system and your endocrine system, okay? But we also know undernutrition can do the same thing. So when you're not eating enough calories, and starvation can cause a hypothalamic inflammation. And we know that malnutrition, so if you're eating the standard American diet, which isn't very rich in phytonutrients, you're also going to experience hypothalamic inflammation. And that will affect how everything runs. Most people don't pay attention to it until something goes off. Their adrenals aren't functioning. Their thyroids aren't functioning. They can't get pregnant. They're inflamed all the time. They have an autoimmune condition. They're depressed. They're anxious. And then they start thinking about, maybe I should feed my body something different. So it's super important we pay attention to it, but understand that, you know, everything you're putting in your mouth, your hypothalamus is choosing to help you survive by those nutrients. That is its main goal. That's its mission, is to help you survive. So if you're not getting, for instance, let's say enough amino acids to make serotonin, your brain is not going to get it first. The hypothalamus will not give it to the brain. It'll give it to the heart first because the heart is more important for survival than the brain. And then it'll give it to the gut, and then it'll give it to the brain. So it's the portal between everything your body's being exposed to and what the brain needs. The brain can function for a long time just on glucose and some fatty acids. Those extra amino acids, the hypothalamus will siphon out when according to how much you're actually giving it.
So if we have, let's say, spent a significant amount of time not eating, not doing the right things, not, you know, let's say overeating or undereating, can we heal the hypothalamus? Can we?
Yes. Yes, you can. You can. You can make dietary changes to heal the hypothalamus. There's also some other lifestyle things that you can do to heal the hypothalamus that affects it drastically. So food is a huge aspect of it, but there's other things to do as well.
And how would someone know, like, if they had a problem with their hypothalamus? So
that's a really good question. So there isn't any specific testing for the hypothalamus, like there is, like, say, for diabetes. And that's because you can't get to the hypothalamic hormones. There's a few you can test, like vasopressin and prolactin, but oxytocin, but you can't really get to the hypothalamic hormones that are the upper aspects. So for instance, most of your clients probably have heard of the HPA axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. That axis runs through all the endocrine system. You got hypothalamic pituitary thyroid axis, hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis. So this axis, this feedback mechanism, is actually affecting all of the endocrine system. The hypothalamus itself is very, very amenable to medications and toxins, et cetera. It'll take it all up and make decisions. But trying to get to the hypothalamus to figure out what's going on biochemically through blood work, saliva testing, urine testing, stool testing, we can't see it. So it almost takes like a medical detective. It's more like field biology. So when I'm looking at a patient, I'm looking at all of their endocrine hormones I can measure with pituitary hormones to look at that nice seesaw negative feedback balance. And I'm looking at inflammatory markers, all the things that I know are affecting the hypothalamus. And I'm putting it all together. And it's kind of like I'm a field biologist and I see scat on the trail. And I know it's coyote scat. And I can see if she's in estrus. I can see what she's eaten, if she's healthy, she's got parasites. But I've not seen the coyote. So all this, so you have to learn all those other factors. That's part of the blood work. A lot of it's in the history. Almost every person who's had some kind of brain trauma has hypothalamic dysfunction. So if you've had brain, I mean, that's a typical question I ask, you know, have you been hit on the head enough to lose consciousness, have a concussion? That's going to cause some hypothalamic dysfunction. And then, of course, the nutritional aspects, not eating enough, eating too much, certain diets will affect it as well. And stress, chronic stress actually affects the hypothalamus. We have MRIs that show that the hypothalamus actually looks different. Its anatomy is changed by chronic stress.
Are some other ones things like infections, like EBV or medications, like toxins?
Yes, those are all the things that can cause hypothalamic dysfunction. So you've got your, you know, toxins in the environment, especially endocrine disruptors like BPA. You've got your heavy metals, your pesticides, different things like that. You also have one of the reasons we have some hypothalamic research now, which back when I was first doing my work wasn't there. And now when I started to write my book, The Hypothalamus Handbook, I couldn't stop putting references in, and the publisher's like, you need to stop and let us publish this thing because there's new research coming constantly. I have a Google search for it. And it's because of COVID-19. Long COVID is hypothalamic dysfunction. So they've actually have started to do more research, and the anti-obesity drugs are showing us research there, and metabolic syndrome. We're seeing way more research. If I put in anything with the hypothalamus and any other diagnosis, I can almost always find some kind of research somebody has done, at least on mice, if not all the way up to humans, and made some conclusions on hypothalamic function, which neurons, which pathways have affected this outcome. So we're finally seeing the research of what I've been doing in clinical practice, you know, kind of from the seat of my pants for 30 years. Now we have the research to say, yeah, this is actually how it works. Maybe we should be looking at this thing.
Yeah, it's so interesting, especially about long COVID, because that's something so many people are struggling with not a lot of answers. So that's actually really exciting that there is more research in that area as well. And I'm curious about the research related to nutrition and hypothalamus. Is there a lot more of that that's coming out in the specific nutritional interventions that people can do that really do impact the hypothalamus as well?
Yes, they've actually looked at some specific nutrient families, not specific nutrients. So for instance, amino acids are uptake by the hypothalamus very easily. Most of the research has been done on branched chain amino acids, but it does affect hypothalamic function. We also know phytonutrients from a wide variety of plant foods, most herbs, most botanicals will be picked up by the hypothalamus. And we also know that PUFAs, specifically omega-3 rich PUFAs from like sea vegetation, are very, very beneficial for hypothalamic functioning.
So my question is, if the root cause for this type of hypothalamic damage is something other than nutrition, then can we use nutrition as our way to heal it? Or are there other techniques or strategies if it were because of infections or toxins or something else?
So I always start with nutrition as for the healing basis. So even if I'm going to have to clear up some underlying viral infection like Epstein-Barr virus hidden in the cells, or a chlamydia virus, or some of the virus or the bacterium, some kind of infection, or if I'm going to have to detox somebody from heavy metals, or we're going to have to detox pesticides, etc. I always start with nutrition to start to give the hypothalamus some roots, to start to allow it to start to do its own work and start to heal itself while we're detoxing, while we're using antimicrobials to get rid of some of these germs and things. And I always look at the gut. The gut is a huge piece of it. So if I'm going to try to use nutrition to heal the hypothalamus, which is the basis of most of what I do, and they can't absorb properly, and although there's the hypothalamic gut access that I've got to consider, I also have to heal up the dysbiosis in the gut and heal up the lining of the intestine and make sure they can absorb, especially these nutrients that I'm asking their body to absorb. I can't just have them eat more protein if they can't break it down and absorb it into the amino acids the hypothalamus needs. So it's yes, I use food, but sometimes I have to use supplementation until they can actually break it down. But I start with the gut. The gut is a huge piece of healing their system so their hypothalamus can function properly.
Yeah, and that's such a good reminder of really the beauty of functional medicine and holistic health and looking at the whole body, because yeah, of course the gut is involved and of course these other things are involved. So it's never just one intervention, one thing. It's often multiple things kind of working together. So that definitely makes a lot of sense. And I know you have 5 pillars that you use with your patients for helping them heal the hypothalamus. Can you share a little bit more about what that entails?
Absolutely. So number one would be nutrition, and just a basic diet that usually works for the majority of my patients, their age groups, their genders, etc., would be the Mediterranean diet. It's plant-based. I mean, I'm not talking pasta and pizza. I'm talking, mostly produce, legumes, whole grains, making sure they're getting enough protein through either dairy, eggs, fish, fowl, less red meat. It's, okay with a little sugar, okay with a little wine, but it's not so restrictive and it's fairly easy to follow. And it's pretty much covers the gamut when you look at dietary regimes in terms of different big diseases like heart disease, stroke, cancers, anti-obesity, diabetes. The Mediterranean diet, people who follow it religiously are usually cleaner in those aspects. So it's a good basis for the hypothalamus. I will get more specific with my patients and look at and do a body composition and look at their lean body mass and make sure they're getting an adequate amount of protein and fat for the lean body mass and look at their activity level and whether or not they need to lose excessive adipose tissue and then calculate how many carbohydrates they need per meal in order to, basically get their body composition so it's most metabolically active. So I get down and dirty with them, but I'll kind of start at that aspect with the Mediterranean-based diet. So that's number one is nutrition. Number two is sleep. So I mean, they can't eat well enough or take enough nutraceuticals or think themselves into wellness if they're not getting enough sleep. And the hypothalamus is very, it controls your circadian rhythm, but it's also very sensitive to your sleep hygiene. We use that terminology in, you know, in the hospital and medicine, but it basically means what's your habits before you go to bed? Because as soon as you start those habits, your hypothalamus goes into the nocturnal mode. So, and you need to do it long enough to change your circadian rhythm. Your hypothalamus is super sensitive to light messages. The optic nerves run right along it. So it very much is sensitive to what's going on with the light. So if you're on a device with a screen that's throwing out blue waves, your hypothalamus thinks it's daytime. So if it's midnight, you're on these devices, it's going to be three more hours before you make enough melatonin. The hypothalamus triggers melatonin production from the pineal gland via melanocyte stimulating hormone, one of its main hormones that it produces. So you need to have a good sleep hygiene, a good sleep routine. You know, I prefer a real book instead of looking at a screen before you go to bed. Turn off all of those lights, sleep in the dark, get comfy. Your room temperature is important. We sleep best. The hypothalamus needs it a little bit cooler, between about 60 and 67 degrees or so. So a little cooler. You know, if the room's too hot, you can't sleep as well. And make sure you go to bed so you have most of your sleep during the nighttime. Now, the issue is people who work graveyard shifts, they need to be sure that they're really, really sleeping in a completely dark space so they can make those dark nocturnal hormones. Those hormones are super important, not just for you to get enough sleep, but for your immune system to function properly. The hypothalamus controls immune function through a hormone called prolactin. And prolactin actually is produced about 3 hours after melatonin. It peaks and it lasts for about 8 hours. So if you're not going to bed on time, you've got those lights on and you're making prolactin into the daytime at nocturnal levels, you will show signs of autoimmune inflammation because your immune system's attacking things that it shouldn't be attacking. So you have a different hormonal milieu at night than you do during the day. You have different functions. You don't want the immune system super active during the day. You want it to clean house at night. So there's just so many factors there that people don't pay attention to and think that they can just, you know, take a sleeping pill and it'll be fine. Not if you've got all the lights on in the room and the TV's still going, that your hypothalamus is still getting stimulated. It is for survival. If the sun's really not down, you know, your hypothalamus is helping you survive. So it's keeping you on that low, you know, that upper level of sleep. You're not really in that deeper sleep, that restorative sleep, because you might have to jump up and run away from danger. You're obviously sleeping out in the open. You know, this is not healthy. So that's number two. Number three is activity. Being sedentary is the new smoking. You've probably said that to your clients. And most people today, because we look at us right now, we're all sitting in front of a computer doing our work. We sit down too much. We don't move around enough and we don't have physically active jobs. So we have to actually institute exercise, physical activity into our daily life. When you're not physically active, your hypothalamus slows your metabolism. You don't need to, you know, burn that much energy. And that slower metabolism means there's an increase in toxin buildup and you're going to gain some, you know, adipose tissue that you may not be healthy or you may not want. So it also affects how fast you age. So being active actually kind of slows down that aging process as well, not just to the brain, but the cells of the body. So trying to be physically active is really important. And whatever you can do, that's with my patients, so start with small. If that means all you're doing is standing up every 30 minutes, you know, yes, take that smartphone and set an alarm and, you know, at 25 minutes of sitting down, stand up for 5 minutes and move around, you know, and then I'll tell them to do some little like body exercises like wall push-ups and tricep dips and, you know, jumping jacks, whatever, just start moving around. And they have studies that show just that 5 minutes every 30 minutes improves metabolism, improves insulin resistance, improves lipid measures. It's not going to give you the cardiopulmonary function of aerobic activity, but you'll start to see improvements. So that's number three. Number four is your healing mindset. I don't have enough, you know, fantastic bioidentical hormones to dip you in, a pristine diet with a chef to go with it, you know, a personal trainer and the perfect sleeping regimen. If you have a mindset that is more attuned to believing in your disease process and that you can't heal, that's how the placebo effect works. So a lot of people get in their own way with their negative mindset. So healing it's really important that you're focusing on what's working. And I've seen patients literally worry themselves into tumors And I've seen them heal themselves through a shift in their mindset. So we have to think about that too when we're counseling our patients and helping them through the process. What's getting in their way? Especially with dietary changes, because a lot of food has emotional aspects, as it should. And there's memories related to taste and texture and smell that may relate back to childhood experience that may or may not be good or bad or indifferent, and then kick up a whole bunch of issues for these patients. So we need to really think about helping them through that process and what's getting in their way. You know, talking about, are they emotionally eating? You know, what's actually happening there? And then my fifth is nutraceutical support. I support the hypothalamus nutraceutically.
Are there specific herbs or remedies that you recommend? And not brand names, but like just types of herbs that you, you know, think are most helpful?
Well, I'm not a believer in single treatments just because it kind of throws off the whole balance. So what I put together is kind of a potpourri of ingredients for the hypothalamus. So the focus is amino acids, those sea vegetations, and a variety of phytonutrients from different whole foods and botanicals. Support for the digestive tract is important. So, you know, if they need pancreatic enzymes, probiotic support, all of that helps, because remember, the gut's talking to the hypothalamus as well. So it's a combination. And then according to the patient's like genetic issues, I may do more specific nutrients. You know, they have a methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase issue. They may be getting sublingual, you know, folic acid in its active form or injectable, you know, things like that. But only if they have those specific issues. I try to get it from food, but even with the best diet, you know, I was raised on a Mediterranean diet. My last name's Greek, but I'm Italian. So I was raised on it. My husband was raised on it. We raised our kids on it. But I'm also living in Southern California. I'm not living in Southern Italy. So I'm not getting the same foods that my DNA grew up with. So that's why I think that we need a little broader base in terms of those different plant foods to actually give that potpourri of nutrients, micronutrients, especially phytonutrients to the hypothalamus.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thank you for all of that information. It sounds very comprehensive with the five pillars and really touching all those different bases that really impact health and the hypothalamus and all of that. So amazing. Before we let you go, we would love for you to share with our audience just three tangible takeaways that they can take away from this podcast episode to help them start to nourish their hypothalamus.
So I would say, this is going to be something you can do right now, tonight, today. Okay. So the first thing you're going to do is turn off your devices after dusk. No more blue light coming from those devices after dusk. That will start your sleep routine. Second thing you're going to do is you're going to introduce a new plant food, some kind of produce, some kind of, you know, veggie, fruit, and you're going to do that every single week. You're going to introduce something new, get a little variety in there. And I find that most of my patients don't know how to cook very well. So if you need to take a cooking course, you need to do that, but you need to start eating foods that are a little bit different and try to spread that variety out. Okay. And then the next thing is, I want you to think about setting your intentions for health. So instead of starting off your day, like jumping up out of bed and you got all this stuff to do and I'm too tired because my prolactin's too high, so I got to take a bunch of caffeine, and why don't you sit down for a moment, maybe keep a little journal by the bed. Maybe you're going to chalk it into your phone. Maybe it's a phone journal, but I like to write because there's something very, very healing about putting things down. And just write out, what are you grateful for? And then what's your intentions for healing for today? Today, I'm going to take that walk. Today, I'm going to try, you know, this vegetable. Today, I'm going to be sure that I get in bed by 10 o'clock. And then just set those intentions. And then in the evening, what was good that you did today? Don't beat yourself up. What did you do? What did you accomplish today? What did you learn today? You know, it helps to set looking for more positive things. And if it's something you didn't do properly, okay, I didn't fit the exercise in. What got in the way and how could I change that? And let it go and go to sleep.
You really packed in such good information into this short podcast. So thank you so much. And you gave really tangible, actionable, you know, recommendations that people could just start today that would have significant impacts on their health. It's these little things. You know, we always think it's just so complicated because oftentimes we have so many different things kind of like address our that are impacting our the way we feel each day, and we can't like pinpoint what is causing all of these different things. And a lot of times they are all connected, and it really just takes these really impactful lifestyle little small modifications to make everything fall into place. So thank you so much for sharing. Would you give our audience a little information about where they can find you?
You can find me at genesisgold.com. That's my website. And my email's there, and I've got hundreds of blog posts there, a YouTube channel, the whole bit, lots of education. All my books are on there. You can find them. You can find my books on Amazon, but you can definitely get a lot more information on the website. I also have like a free training. I call it Hormone Reboot Training, which is like education about all those pillars we talked about. So that's another thing that you can sign up for and just get some more information. I think education is key to empowerment, to changing our health.
Thank you so much. This has been really fun. I know our audience is going to love it. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you found this episode helpful, we'd love if you left a rating and review and shared it with someone else who would find it helpful. You can find more information about Leah at gracefunctionalnutrition.com and get in touch with her through email at leah@gracefunctionalnutrition.com or on Instagram at gracefunctionalnutrition. To find more information about Stacy, you can find her at healfromfood.com, email her at stacy@healfromfood, or on social media at healfromfood. See you next time.